As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. Welcome to Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I'm your co-host, John Paul McClellan, here to introduce you to your host, Claudio. And now, bringing back the art of the spoken word through narratives and poetry, the Richard Burton of the Triangle, the Richard Harris of Carborough, our own Renaissance man, storyteller, narrator, author, classical poet, actor, adventurer, photograph, artist, visual artist, European gourmet chef, and entertainer, host of Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here's Claudio.
Anything to avoid a job. That's really the whole idea behind all that.
Yeah, and it's working so far, isn't it?
It is, indeed. Want to give a quick shout-out to the Carolina Theatre of Durham, the historic Carolina Theatre of Durham, one of our underwriters and sponsors. And also John Demers, who is presently in hospital. Hello, John, in case you're tuning in, of Studio in the Woods, Inc., the independent film company. Thank you for your continued support. John Paul, I'm having trouble hearing myself at all.
Turn yourself up. Second. It's called the volume control knob.
One, two, three. There we go. That's much better. That was my fault. He told me this morning he was turning the whole damn show down. So,
yeah, it's just a little too oppressive for me, you know. So
we're coming at you from a pirate ship in the Virgin Islands at this point. And anything goes.
Indeed.
This is the Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM. Any colorful letters you want to add to that?
G, H, and W.
Well, at least that's not Gandhi. What was that?
I don't know. Just some letters I thought of.
So it's actually WCOM, LP.
Know any colorful letters?
Chapel Hill and Carborough, since I can't get this co-host in gear.
Green, heliotrope, and walnut.
I didn't ask you what you had for breakfast.
Oh, no. That's, yeah.
Anyway, we've got a regular Annie Get Your Gun show for you today, and I hope Annie doesn't mind me referring to her that way. Annie is actually Sherry Monahan, who is a rather prolific Western author. And I'm not just talking Western fiction. As a matter of fact, I don't think we've ever talked about her writing fiction. I think most of it is absolutely factual. She digs into the Western culture as far as food goes, the way the West really was, not the Hollywood version, which has never given us a clue, and has just come out with another book about Apex. That is Apex, North Carolina, my former hometown for about 8 years. I was actually dubbed the Apex Poet there once upon a time, but they've probably forgotten me by now. And here's Sherry. Sherry, please say good morning to our Carborough, Chapel Hill, and worldwide audiences, wherever they may be.
That's right. We're streaming on the web, you know.
Well, good morning to everyone who's ever listening.
Yes, indeed. Great to have you on. And
thank
I'm
you.
Really looking forward to it. First of all, I want to hear about the new book, but one of my dreams has always been to write some sort of a Western novel, because my passion for America has always sort of been symbolized by the West. I've always thought that was a core American philosophy, although I've come to find that out with the political sway these days, I'm not quite sure what America stands for. But I'd still like to think that there's a bit of a heart and soul of the actual United States there. What drew you into that? Because I know you're not originally from the West. What got you so encumbered in pursuing and exploring the American West?
You know, it's hard to say. People ask me that all the time, and my
father... Well, here I am again, then.
Again. I know you'd think I'd have this answer down pat by now. really, I just fell in love with the American West. I think when I... Silly to say this, but the TV show Dallas,
mm-hmm.
you know, with J.R. Ewing...
Wait a minute, that wasn't the West?
Hey, Texas is the West now.
Right. They've transplanted Texas.
It was right next to the town of Upchuck. Yeah.
There's still a few natives there.
It's been moved to the West.
I just sort of got hooked on that show, and at that point I decided, you know, one day I really want to live in the Old West. My father loved country and Western music. He always wore cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. I grew up wearing Western clothing, and, you know, even though I lived in New Jersey, I sort of was a little oddball.
That's interesting, yeah.
I understand that. My father sang the Western songs all my life.
See,
the girl in the boots and the top hat, that's her.
Yeah, that's me, you know, in New Jersey, sticking out like a sore thumb. And I went to Arizona 1 year for vacation, and I think it was 1995, and went out there and just fell in love with the area and said, you know, somehow I wanted to be connected to Arizona, and especially Tombstone. We had made it down to the southern part of Arizona. We had gone to the Grand Canyon, and I just loved it up there. Mm-hmm. Went to Tombstone, fell in love with the place, and one of my hobbies is cooking. I love to cook, and when I got to Tombstone, wherever I go on vacation, anywhere, I always take my husband, and make him take me to the grocery store and say, okay, where do I get my souvenirs? You know, what kind of honey do they have? What kind of jam? Uh-huh. That's my souvenir.
They still have bees out there.
And they still have bees. African killer bees, by the way.
Great.
<They've laughs> Which I got stung by last year and survived.
Oh, should have kept your top hat on.
Right? It was actually my leg, but the one time I get caught wearing shorts in southern Arizona, I get stung. Usually wear jeans out there because a lot of things scratch and bite. So, but fell in love with the place and decided I wanted to be connected somehow. And came back from vacation 1 year and I thought, you know what? I love food. And what did Tombstone, Arizona, back in its heyday, eat? What did they have for food? So I started doing some research, and that's how I found out what they were eating. And lo and behold, to my surprise, I expected to find chuck wagon grub. You know, chili, steak, beans, the things that you think of associated.
The typical
Southwestern food. Yeah, that we
have
today.
From the movies.
No, but it was actually mushrooms and quiche, right?
Oh, yeah. You're not far off, though, because back then.
Just don't wear pink.
Yeah, don't wear pink. Yeah. Never in Arizona. Yeah. Not as a guy.
Okay.
Actually, anywhere in the West. But what I found was they were eating classic French food. And the reason that this was happening is that back then, people tend to think of the American West happening at one time and the Victorian era happening at a different time, when in fact they actually happened at the same time.
Simultaneously.
And
interesting.
At the same time. So when you think about the people that went to Tombstone in the 1880s to make their fortune, and silver was the big draw to Tombstone, Arizona. That's why people went there. There was a huge silver mining boom industry. So when people went there, they were the Victorian people. They were coming from San Francisco, New York City, from Europe. And Tombstone was making a ton of money at the time from the mine. So everything was very sophisticated. People were wearing beautiful Victorian dresses. Men were wearing top hats and suits. So, of course, classic French food was what was on the menu. So that's how I got started with Tombstone.
Wait,
I know that's a long
way
around.
Let me get my Derringer. Hold on. It's in my boot. Sorry, I had to interrupt.
That's quite all right.
Yeah, I know, that's something we definitely don't think of. And I think the limited aspect that is conveyed to us about that is usually at the end of some Western where you see the Old West changing and sort of overlapping into the new, and you see a car driving down while this guy's riding his horse. And that's about as close as we've come to showing a parallel between the Victorian era and the West.
That's true. I think the movie Tombstone that everybody knows and loves, at least I do.
I do.
I've seen it, I couldn't tell you, over 100 times.
My goodness.
I'm a junkie. I could probably quote you every line from the movie. It's sad. but they did a really, really great job with costuming and with the set. Everything that you saw there was pretty much what you would have seen had you walked into a saloon or a business in Tombstone in the 1880s.
And you said you knew the costumier for that, for the film production.
I knew the historical...
The historian, sorry.
The historical consultant that did the movie, and we talked about it a lot, and he's a great Tombstone enthusiast and historian as well. And he said, the funny thing is, I hope I can say this on the radio, I don't get any trouble, but...
Well, just okay, don't, nobody can see you.
Can't say
nobody
the seven,
can see me, right?
Yeah, you can't say the seven bad words, though.
I won't include any of those.
Just don't, sure. Just don't quote George Carlin, that's it.
Well, yeah. Rumor has it, I'll say that, that Kevin Costner was making the movie Wyatt Earp at the same time and knew that the movie Tombstone was probably going to come out a little bit before his, and he didn't want competition with the movie Tombstone and the movie Wyatt Earp. So he gobbled up all of the sets and all of the props and all of the clothing in Hollywood so that they couldn't use them for the movie Tombstone. So Kevin Jarre, who was the producer, the director, ended up going to England to get all of the costuming for the movie. So I say I think it did worked out really well because the costuming was phenomenal.
It was more authentic than
what was in Hollywood because they would have had European clothing in Tombstone. So it was really a boom for Tombstone.
And how would you parallel those two Westerns?
They both had their strengths and their weaknesses. I think I like the movie Tombstone better because it gave more history about the town itself and the events, where the movie Wyatt Earp more focused on Wyatt's life itself, which was actually quite true. I didn't really prefer the portrayal of Doc Holliday in the Wyatt Earp movie.
I forget who portrayed him.
Dennis Quaid. And Val Kilmer, you know, hit a slam dunk, you know, nobody could top that. Yeah. But he was a Georgia gentleman. He was a dentist. He was very witty. The information and the rumors about Wyatt, or about Doc, you know, slapping his women around and being abusive and nasty have never been proven, and I don't think that that was the character that most people knew when they knew him and they wrote about him in the Old West in olden times. They really didn't olden times. Boy, do I sound old or what? Back in the day.
I think most of the Westerns, both in novel format as well as on film, have left a great deal of Doc Holliday's background up in the air.
They have, and just the whole thing about him being an abusive man was the main focus for that movie, and I think that's why I don't care for that one as well as I do the movie Tombstone.
I understand. Now, I was wondering, I was quite surprised to see that these two films would come out at the same time, because they absolutely competed with each other, but hands down, I would say that Tombstone takes the Oscar.
Now, if you ask my husband that while I'm watching the movie, he'd swear that I would say that was the worst movie ever made because I'm always correcting what was wrong historically. But I've stopped doing that. He always says, "Can we just watch the movie and enjoy it?" Okay.
Quiet now.
All right.
I haven't seen a good Western in a while. The last good Western I saw was actually with Kevin Costner. What was that? Open Range.
Yeah,
I really liked that one.
I enjoyed that as well. You got to love Robert Duvall.
No, absolutely.
I mean, what's not to love?
Boss Man, yeah. So give us the titles of all of your books and then tell us a little bit about each one in the sequence you'd like to have it.
Okay. The first book came out in 1998, and that was called Taste of Tombstone. And that was my very first one, and that is about the hospitality industry, I like to say, in Tombstone.
I was going to say, it sounds like a jawbreaker.
Yeah. Taste of Tombstone.
Not the pizza.
But none of the recipes in there are.
Good.
It's really a history of Tombstone, a brief history of Tombstone in the 1880s when it was at its heyday. And it talks about the hotels, the restaurants, the ice cream parlors, all of the food-related and hospitality things that happened. In the back half of the book, there's 140 recipes. Those recipes are actually based on the menus that appeared in the newspapers back in Tombstone. So you could open up the newspaper, see all of the big restaurants, what they were going to be serving that particular day for dinner, and then you would go in and eat them. So the recipes are literally things that you can make and recreate that people were eating back in Tombstone at that time.
Wow.
I might have to try a few of those
dishes on my future victims.
There you should.
Yes.
And the cool thing is that the recipes are ones that you would probably find and the listeners would probably find in their grandmother or great-grandmother's cookbooks.
I can see that.
You have, you know, chicken fricassee, chicken giblet soup, and there's a few fancy dishes in there, but then you also have pies, pumpkin pie, huckleberry pie, or gooseberry pie, I should say. You have just the basic stuff that, you know, Granny would have. And so a lot of the recipes are going to be familiar to people. It's not something that you would find, you would think you would find in the Old West. The second book that I did was a book about... The second book that was out was called Pike's Peak. And that's a book that is about the Pikes Peak, Colorado area. I had a great, great aunt who lived there at the time. And what she did was they went there for her health because she was suffering from breathing problems. And what she did was, She actually went out.
Hold on, let's go back.
We're not really having technical difficulties. What we're having is a conflict.
All I know is...
I was trying to adjust Claudio's headphones so he could hear better.
What happened was
the thing shut off.
The cable itself.
Yeah.
You cut him off, is what you're saying.
So sorry, love. Please go back to that again.
Well, I didn't cut him off. It was a function of the
We've got this airline pilot that keeps throwing his drinks out the window.
Yeah, and boy,
damned annoying.
That wind really comes by fast when you're throwing your drinks out the window up in the, you know, at 35,000 feet.
And it's smacking my cables.
Well.
So now is it working again?
We'll leave that. Thank you. It's working.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean,
Sherry. I'm dreadfully sorry.
Right.
Apparently we have
back
a little,
to you. Do you remember where you were? Because I don't.
I do for a fact.
Back to you.
Go on.
I will pick up back with the second
now,
book of Pikes.
The continuing saga.
Of Pikes Peak.
There we go.
Pikes Peak is in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I had a great aunt who went there. Her picture's actually on the cover of the book. She was a photographer in the 19-teens and 20s. And so that book is with Arcadia Publishing, who does a series called Images of America. And that is a photographic series. So the history is told through photographs with small captions about all the photographs in there, which is what the Apex book will be when it comes out.
Ah,
same series.
Okay. And how far back, just to divert for a moment, how far back have you gone with Apex?
Apex, we went back to, or I should say, I went back to the 1860s and 1870s when we first, the town first had its railroad stop, or I should say post office and railroad and lots of good stuff.
Before there was a 64 West.
Before.
And I was there when 64 West was only a one lane.
Whoa.
So one lane?
One lane each way. Oh. Two lanes, shall we say.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is it? Why did you really
was
go
say,
back?
One lane, that sounds very dangerous.
And lots of shortcuts that no longer exist.
Horse and buggy, too, or what?
Lots of head-on collisions.
Not quite that far, but we go back to your west. I'm sorry. Rude interruption, but I'm known for that.
That's funny.
There's nothing wrong with a little diversion once in a while.
Good.
Especially when it's humorous.
Especially.
Well, let's hope they think so.
If not ridiculous.
Yes, let's border on that, shall we?
Are you guys done?
Yes, darling.
Probably not. No. But go ahead.
Back to you.
Oh, okay. Oh, let's see. The Pikes Peak book. So that's the end of that one, really. It's really just a great book about, if you want to look at great pictures of the Old West in Colorado, it's a really cool book.
And your narrative is pretty much the history.
Pretty much the history, yep.
Okay.
The third book is a fun book. It's called The Wicked West, and the subtitle is called Boozers, Cruisers, Gamblers, and More.
Ooh, and I didn't get that book.
I didn't. I'll have to bring you one next time.
That's the one that goes with my reputation.
Well,
now, that sounds like it could be a movie right there.
It does, actually.
They're all nonfiction, as you indicated earlier.
Like,
no, I haven't
Trains, written
fiction.
Planes, and Automobiles.
Boozers, Cruisers, Gamblers, and More.
This is how you get lost on the way to those planes, trains, right. and automobiles.
Absolutely. That's really got a great collection of stories about drinking, drugs, gambling, prostitution, saloons, any kind of vice that you could have found in the Old West is in this book.
How do we get there from here?
Well, if I have to tell you.
Well, speaking of that, there's something I want to ask you about, and that's something that a mutual friend, Bob Crowley of the Apex Town Council, insisted or prodded me to ask you, and that is you were on the History Channel, apparently something that's going to be aired in the not-too-distant future, and you were involved in some kind of whiskey making. I'm going to let you take the story from there.
And drinking.
And drinking, yes.
We heard.
On Sunday at 8:30.
Wonderful.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Hey.
What
there
a
goes,
way to start
there goes
day.
Sunday.
Just remember.
Is that on the way to church?
Yes, if you want to, if you'd like to think so.
Is that when I was in the pulpit?
Yeah. Well, White Lightning is not just a breakfast food.
Not right? anymore.
No.
That is true. I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico a few months ago filming a new series for the History Channel that is supposed to air later this year. It's called Cowboys and Outlaws. They're going to be bringing back a new Western series, which they haven't had for a while. So I'm very excited about that.
Awesome.
The show that I'm doing is Wyatt Earp Show. And we were
Wyatt
talking.
Earp show?
It's going to be about Wyatt Earp, correct?
Oh, so there is a show that exists called the Wyatt,
no,
Wyatt Earp show?
No, the series is called Cowboys and Outlaws.
Oh, I see, okay.
And then they have different shows. One of them is going to be about Billy the Kid. One is going to be about the two cowboys that were portrayed in Lonesome
right,
Dove.
Okay.
And then my show will be about Wyatt Earp, talking about his life. And so what they had me do was come in as a drinking and gambling expert. I can't understand why.
I don't understand. Where did they get that?
I don't know. I really don't.
And on top of all that, she's kind of cute, folks.
No, thank you.
Me
How
thinks,
much have you had to drink?
No. Right. It's not closing time yet, love. But this is the speakeasy.
It is. I should have actually brought us some of the drinks I actually drank that day on the show.
Well, next time we'll hold you to that.
Just for the audience's information, we don't allow alcoholic beverages in the studio.
Says who? In the studio. No.
Yes, no, not in the studio.
No, not in the pulpit.
But outside in our cars, no problem.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Any other speakeasy?
Before we come in, we'll hit the sauce.
Yeah. Or we can do a taste test afterwards.
Absolutely. And then you can test about it later, right?
Mm-hmm. And just to remind you folks, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM in the studio with my co-host, John Paul McClellan.
That's right, and we are at WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carborough.
And we are discussing five books with the author of them. Her name is Sherry Monahan, and she is a Western, I want to say Western novelist, Western writer. How would you refer to yourself?
Western author and historian, I guess.
There we go. Let's see, I just flew by that coop altogether. But that's it, what she said.
It was close enough.
It's close enough. People would get it.
Back to you, O Bird in the Cage.
Drinking.
Yeah,
you
wonderful.
Wanted the History Channel
lovely
show.
Lovely idea. We have a show about it.
We're going to, yeah. hopefully. Definitely by the end of the year, the director at the History Channel told me.
Good.
And so what we did was, there's part of the show is going to be recreations, where you see people in Old West outfits, and it's supposed to look like it's in the Old West. And then there are other parts where I am involved in it, and we're doing recreations of things in the Old West. And I have an actor who is a bartender with me at one point, and then I have another actor who is a gambler at the gambling table what I'm doing. So we talk about the drinks that were being drunk back in the 1880s and, you know, whether Wyatt did or did not drink. And then we talk about the game of faro, which Wyatt dealt in the movie Tombstone, but he really did deal that in life for a while. So the drinking,
one where he takes over the table.
Where he takes over the table and, you know, throws out, you know. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing is I'm standing at a bar on a movie set and talking about what was actually being, you know, drunk back in the Old West. And the Hollywood myth is that you walk up to the bar and you slam down your coin and you get a shot of whiskey. And that did happen in some basic rough saloons. But when you talk about saloons in the cities of Tombstone and Dodge City, Virginia City, that had money, people were drinking very fancy drinks. Some of the top 10 drinks in 1881 were a champagne flip, whiskey cocktails, a drink called Ben and Jerry, which had a raw egg in it.
A drink called Ben and Jerry.
Called Ben and Jerry. Or Tom and Jerry. I'm sorry.
Oh, Tom and Jerry.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me on that.
Just wondering.
Tom and Jerry.
Just wondering if there's been some sort of reincarnation going on.
I was thinking ice cream cartoon. I'm not sure.
Boy, I may have lost that touch.
So what year are we talking about?
1881.
Okay.
So these were the drinks that people would go into the bar and order. It wasn't just a shot of whiskey. Actually, if you went in and ordered a shot of whiskey, you probably were considered a ruffian. I mean, you were drinking very fancy drinks in the towns that had money. So we were trying.
So don't give those guys from the speakeasy the house brand.
That's right.
That's right. So what we had to do is try to recreate these. Well, one of the things that people used to do back in the Old West when they either couldn't get their supply of whiskey or they couldn't afford to get a supply of whiskey and they had customers who wanted whiskey is they would make their own.
Aha.
Now, this is what was called rot gut, and how it's got its name was rot gut because it was so bad it
That's
could literally
it did
rot
you.
Your guts.
Oh, Lord.
And what rot gut...
John DeMers, we hope you're listening to this. Don't do that.
And what rot gut really is just moonshine, because everybody can get moonshine anywhere, anytime. They can even make their own in most parts of the Old West. And they take that moonshine, and they add to it plug tobacco and burnt sugar.
And this is for coloring.
This is for coloring and flavoring.
Flavoring, yeah.
They
flavoring
let that
too, okay.
sit for a little while, and then they strain it out into their old whiskey bottles, cork
now,
it,
now this,
set it on the bar, and start pouring whiskey.
This tobacco is not pre-digested spitting tobacco, is it?
At least the one I was making wasn't.
Hopefully not. Yes, that would be rather
so
disgusting.
So the producer or the director thought it would be really, really cool if I would drink this for the audience. Since I just showed you how to make it, she wanted to capture my expression.
Here we go.
So. Oh, ouch. My, you're in for a treat when you see that one.
Ah, my goodness.
It really didn't taste terribly
And I
bad.
Heard they did seven takes?
We only did three.
Oh.
And
well, Bob, you exaggerated.
No, only three on that one.
Oh,
and the
I
reason,
see.
And I have to share this with people who don't know anything about making movies or TV, and I didn't know this either until I actually did it, is I always thought, good Lord, don't these people know how to get their stuff together? They got to do several takes. And it's not that you can't get your stuff together. It's just that there are several, when you're working with a low-budget, you know, documentary company, they have one camera and one sound guy. And every time you see, when you look at the show or you look at any show and you take a look at it and you see a front face shot or you see a side face shot or you see a shot with there's a whole group of people, every time you see a different shot, that's a different take because you've only got one camera guy and he can only be in one place at one time.
Right, yeah.
So I had to redo my scene three times to every different camera angle that you see. So I had to drink that stuff three times. And then after that, I had to show people what a champagne flip was to show that, okay, they weren't just drinking shots of whiskey, that they were drinking these drinks. So we had to make a champagne flip. Well, what's in a champagne flip is a raw egg, sugar, and champagne.
And this goes back to the Western
era. This is back in 1880s, in the Western time. Again, Victorian era, mm-hmm. Western time, this is what they were drinking. We shook all that up, and it looked like a frothy eggnog, and you top that with a little nutmeg for color and enhancement, and I drank that three times. So technically, there were six takes with whiskey that I had to drink this stuff.
Oh, my God. So and I'll have the other three drinks in my dressing room. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that the bartender, who is the actor, knew we were going to be doing this, and he had to celebrate. So he had, I think it was a 30-year-old bottle of scotch. So after we were done set, we celebrated.
Well, that was a good thing to use to wash it away.
Well, the funny thing is that...
But the hair of the dog hadn't even bit you yet.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing is that we went on to do the Faro set, where I'm showing people how to gamble, and we're doing this. And I was a little nervous at first when I first started working on the drinking set. And it was about 11 o'clock when we started doing the gambling set, and the director said to me in between takes, she said, and she's from England, and she says, "Oh, you're doing so much better this second half." And I was like, and I said, "I'm freaking looped. Of course I'm doing better."
No inhibitions, love.
Really into it now.
So, but that was a lot of fun. But I'll get back to my books now, since we so diverted from them.
I'm really enjoying these excursions. Life in the Shortcuts. Yes,
that's right. The fourth book was going back to Tombstone, and that one is called Tombstone's Treasures, Silver Mines and Golden Saloons. And that is exactly what it is. It's a nonfiction book about Tombstone's history, but it revolves around the silver mines and the saloons and all of the entertainment that was available to Tombstone. They had a bowling alley. They had an in-ground swimming pool in 1883 that's still in use today. And it was built from adobe bricks at the time. It's been, of course, enhanced since then.
I've always wanted an adobe house.
An adobe house. Very cool.
I bet.
They also had a racetrack. They had a baseball team. They had everything. Again, this was a cosmopolitan town with lots of money, so there were lots of fun things to do in Tombstone. And then the fifth one, of course, will be the Apex book through the Arcadia Images of America series, which will be out before the end of this year.
Which was inspired because that's where you live now.
No, I actually live in Willow Spring.
Oh, okay.
But I joined the Apex Writers Guild to sort of connect with other writers and in this area, since I mainly am in the West, and I don't have a chance to talk about it here very much. So I thought, well, what the heck, let's get together with some other authors and writers and, you know, get to share that
I'm
stuff.
I'm actually going to start showing up at these.
I wish you would. We have fun. And that's where I met Bob Crowley.
Right.
And it was actually his idea for me to write the Apex book, so I have to thank Bob for suggesting it. I took it to my publisher, and they were like, "Yeah, let's do it." So,
wonderful.
Yeah, I met a lot of great people in Apex who have shared tons of great photos and history, and it's just amazing. The town has a little bit of a Western history itself, where they had a one-legged sheriff.
Oh, right.
They had dirt roads and, you know, horses and saloons, just like everybody else did. They had a distillery.
I knew there was something I liked about the place.
See, they had a distillery right on town until the church people came along and said, "Oh, this won't do. We want to be a nice, sophisticated town coming up, and you get out of town."
So. Well, they became a dry county at one point.
Yeah, I think they've eased up on that now.
Yeah, they have.
Yep.
I sensed that easing up when I was there.
Yeah, I had a friend who lived there in the 70s, the late 60s and 70s, and they were dry for a while.
Speaking of stills, a good friend of mine is the mayor of Lizard Lake, Charles Wood. Mayor Charles
Wood.
Gotta
love Lizard Lake.
One of the first shows.
Isn't that a great name?
We've had. And the town was actually named after a liquor still. Was referred to as Lizard Liquor at one time, and then they just sort of cut it short.
Oh, I did.
Here's Lizard Lake at the crossroads.
Very neat.
Whoops, you missed it. So, wonderful. So what's the next project on the horizon?
I have a project right now. I'm going to be going to a Western Writers Conference in Oklahoma City next week to sort of pitch this to a couple of publishers. And I was working on a story about a lady who came from England in 1886 and went to Lake County, California. And what I discovered was that she was this very English socialite, and her husband was a stockbroker, and her two brother-in-laws were stockbrokers. Mm-hmm. And they went to California, and she published 18 months' worth of her letters that she wrote home. And I thought this would make an awesome story about, when I read her letters, you see this woman who is very, very snobby, and she's on the SS Britannic coming over from England, and she's writing in her letters that, I do hope that I don't get that silly American sing-song voice when I live there. I mean, that's how arrogant she is. And her mother sends her into the kitchen with the servant so that she can learn how to roast meat and bake bread so that she doesn't starve on the American frontier. And in the end of her letters, after 18 months, you see this transformation from this very snobby woman to a woman who is milking the cows, nursing kittens back to health and having a baby goat that she named Bimby sleep on her lap. And so it's this great transformation. And I pitched it to a publisher last year when I had that information, and he went, well, that's a great story, but, you know, where's all the juicy stuff? You know, nobody wants to read about just this nice, pleasing story, not in today's market. They want something juicy. And I said, well, I'm sorry, it's just poor Lady Evelyn, you know, just doing her thing. I'm sorry she's not as exciting as I thought she was to you. And so I decided, let me pursue this a little bit more. And I started looking into her history, and I couldn't find anything on Evelyn and her last name. And I don't want to give it all away.
How was it then that the letters emerged prominently when there was little else about
her? The letters I stumbled upon, the Library of Congress has got a great series where the WPA went out and interviewed tons of people from the Old West to try to capture these people in the 20s and 30s before they passed away, because of course the American West was a time in our history that no one else has, and that was dying quickly, and all the people who lived it were quickly going as well. So they set out to capture everything. And in this collection, I stumbled across her letters.
So it was an archival situation.
It was an archival thing. And so I was incorporating her into another book that I was working on, which is sitting by the wayside right now. And so I thought, let me find some more about Evelyn. Well, I couldn't find her anywhere. And one thing led to another in researching it, and I find out that Evelyn is actually another woman. And she used a false name, and the letters were actually published under initials. Someone connected that little piece in 1925, and it turns out that there's all kind of scandal with this woman. I mean, she dumped her children in England. She joined the theater. She had an affair with her second cousin, and the maid that her mother sent over to take care of the baby married the second cousin, and they split up. And
oh my goodness,
there's so much stuff. So
there we have it.
I can't wait to see the publisher next week and say, remember
Sounds
that
like
book
a
you said
soap
was
opera.
What?
Please have her join us on the speakeasy.
Yeah, it's a soap opera.
So that's my project.
Oh, boy, it sounds like you sort of tapped into a gold mine there.
I have. I just can't wait to set and write it. The only problem is that I don't have anything official that connects this woman, Evelyn, with the person I know her to be. I'm 99% certain that it's her, so I'm probably going to have to write it as either a historical fiction or a creative nonfiction. So I have to figure out which way. That's what I'm going to talk to the publishers about, which way to take it.
I'd be very curious as to why she would choose a separate name for the letters.
Well, I can tell you that, but I'd probably give the story away. No, I mean, no. I know why, so you have to read the book.
Yes, there we go. And the book will be out sometime in the future.
I hope.
Want to let you folks out there know, we're talking to the author and historian Sherry Monahan, who is very immersed in subjects of the West, but has just recently written a book about Apex. What is the title again?
It's simply Apex.
Ah.
It's very basic, very simple.
Which is a beautiful little hometown for anybody that's looking for one.
It is great. I call it a Main Street community. I believe that's what it's referred to. Yeah. And it's very, very interesting town. The history just sort of surprised me when I got into it. And it's kind of cool.
Give us your contact information and your website and anything you'd want to expose to the public.
My website is wildwestinfo.com. That's pretty easy.
Basic.
Yeah,
wildwestinfo.com.
I also have another website. I am a marketing writer, and I have that's where the Apex book information is going to be. So that's just my name, sherrymonahan.com, and it's sherrymonahan.com.
There we go.
So you can reach me either at those places.
And you can peruse that to see the books he has, and I imagine excerpts and so on.
Yeah, and the Wild West Info website always has a free monthly recipe, one is which from the book, so you can go out there. There's a collection of about a dozen right now.
Good.
I also write for a magazine called True West.
Boy, you're pretty constant with a pen, aren't you?
I try to be. Well, I love to write about the Old West, so the magazine is in the United States out of Cave Creek, Arizona, but it gets distributed all over the world. They have subscriptions from all kinds of places.
What's it called?
True West.
Oh, True West.
It's simply called True West. And I think it's twmag.com on the website. And I have a column in there, a monthly column called Frontier Fare. Surprisingly enough, it's about food.
Oh, darn. We keep returning to that.
Somehow,
is something,
yes, food.
Something going on.
There's
here.
A bit of a consciousness creeping into my brain about that because if all goes well, I may be doing a little chefing on television in the not-too-distant future. Can't give away when or where just yet, but...
Yes, there's going to be, we think, there's going to be a show where Claudio appears on TV.
Consistently in a talk show as Chef Claudio, but that's
very
as much
exciting.
As I can give away at this point.
Right.
I've actually been working with the producer from my Lost World show. I was on the Lost World show. It was a series on the History Channel as well. And we did a show called Sin City of the West. And I was the one of the main investigators for the show, where we went back and dug up old clues to see what was in Deadwood before the fire. And that is the Lost Worlds part of Deadwood. Is when it first started out, everything in the town was built of timber, because they had wood everywhere, mm-hmm. of course, Deadwood.
Yes.
And then a massive fire ripped through the town, and it was all rebuilt with brick, which they had a brick manufacturing place very near to the town. So we went back and we tried to uncover clues and recreate what the original Deadwood looked like.
Now, is there still a place under that name?
There is still. Deadwood is still a very big, thriving community.
Really?
Kevin Costner actually has a saloon there called the Morning Star, I believe.
Huh.
His parents don't live far from there, so he's out there a lot. I've never run into him, but, you know, someday.
Maybe someday.
The town is starting to gain back more of its history. There are a lot of casinos. I think the town was at a point where they were starting to get very low on revenue, and they needed to do something to at least survive, so they brought casinos in. A little bit of the history away, but now they're getting back to it.
Sounds a lot like the country now.
That's right.
Yeah, the whole country.
The Obama mama we're all drinking.
It's just all one big crapshoot.
Yeah, yep. Big crapshoot. There you go.
That's what we're on.
But the producer from that show...
and we're talking Deadwood.
Deadwood.
The show Deadwood.
Is in England, but he has a lot of contacts. Yeah, what can I say?
He's not even in the West.
Is he English?
Yeah, but he is English.
Uh-huh.
But he has a love of the Old West that mm-hmm. just is amazing. And you can just, when you talk to him, his enthusiasm about the Old West is awesome. And so he has gotten together with me. We've been trying to get a TV show for who knows what channel, but to do a series with me going out in a big RV and traveling around the Old West and preparing food from that particular area.
I can see that being up your alley.
I would love to do that. So he's been trying to, you know, work it. So if anybody's out there that wants to help me with that, please let me know.
Yes.
But we thought it would be really cool to sort of give a little bit of history for a particular town, cook some food that was native to that area, and then maybe serve it up to some of the locals who I would interview about their old mm-hmm. Western connection. So I thought it would be kind of fun.
That sounds like a great idea.
So who knows? Maybe we'll both be on TV with cooking
who
shows.
Who knows? Or jump on that same wagon and cook for others.
Let's do it.
Try this. Does it taste anything like what you had? Yeah. Ooh, didn't mean to blow you up.
Yeah.
You never, never, ever make the cookie mad.
Right. That's it. They all knew that. Cookie was always protected.
Right.
How close does Deadwood, the show itself, come to being authentic?
The Deadwood show I absolutely loved, and it was a great show.
I have never heard a show with more obscenity as far as language goes in anything I've seen.
That is very true. And... truth
did they
be told,
even know some of those words back then?
They did. Truth be told, though, is if you walked into a town and every person in that town was saying that, you were looking at fiction.
I would think. I would like to think.
Al Swearengen, which was played by Ian McShane, mm-hmm. he was a very rough character and very, very believable that is how he talked.
Hmm.
I mean, that is so true. But for everyone else in the town to be saying those obscenities, if you think about it, put it in perspective, back in the Old West, you were arrested and fined in most towns for vulgar language. Vulgar being, you know, the S word,
mm-hmm.
hell.
Right.
You know, those were bad words back then. So to say the F word or any of those other words that they said in Deadwood, you just, no way. It was just not even heard
I always
of.
Found that a bit hard to digest as far as the language goes.
But I think David Milch, who did the show, I've read interviews, and I know people who know him, said that he needed a wow factor, and you know he needed to get people to watch the show. And it is amazing when you think about how Westerns were so popular and how they have fallen off so dramatically. You know, people just, oh, big, it's a big deal. It's a Western. Who cares, you know? There's not a lot of explosions. There's not a lot of blowing ups,
pathetic.
You know? And the Old West has so much still to teach people and to give to people. So I think, you know, you take the show for what it was, is that it got people interested in the Old West. And a friend of mine who you'll see often on the History Channel, Paul Hutton, mm-hmm. is a University of New Mexico professor of history, and he always says, and it's so true, is that any kind of Western show that you can get out there, we should support as Westerners, because it gets it out there and it gets people interested. And I think that's what David Milch sort of did with that show, with the graphic images and with the graphic language, is there were people that I worked with that were 20-some-year-olds who had no care, no interest in the Old West, but they would say to me, man, did you catch that show at Deadwood last night? And I was like, oh, yes, somebody's interested in the Old West again.
But the one thing that I always loved Westerns from, and that's from back in South Africa before I even came to the States and knew what television was, we did have movies, is that you could depend on the Western for a good storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I would much rather see a great storyline than I would any special effects at all.
I agree. I mean, anybody can do special effects.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take, and I probably will offend some people who write these, but, you know, it doesn't take a very talented person to have explosion scenes, you know,
no,
and blow-ups.
It takes. I fall asleep to them, frankly.
As long as your TV volume's not up too loud, right? Boom, right. Shake you out of your sleep. But it takes somebody who's very talented and can look at the big picture, who can give you a great storyline from beginning to end and doesn't lose you somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And there are some Westerns that have done that. Let me tell you, there's some real snoozers out there.
It is truly a pity how the Western genre in cinema has just fallen away. It's a pity that Eastwood gave up the ghost with it. Because I think as far as Western directors go, you can't do better than Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood is my absolute favorite. There's only one movie that I won't watch of Clint Eastwood's, and the rest of them are just, you know.
Which one is that?
Tightrope.
Tightrope, the police drama, yeah.
But, you know, absolutely love one. Clint Eastwood. He's just phenomenal.
I don't think anybody makes a Western any better. I think, what's his name, the fellow we've been talking about all morning, Wyatt Earp.
Kurt Russell?
No.
Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner,
does a pretty good job with it.
He really, really does.
He really impressed me with the genre when he did Open Range.
Yeah, he really did. He's had some awesome movies, and he obviously loves the American West.
Mm-hmm.
That's clear in a lot of the stuff that he does.
Doesn't he have a place in Montana? I think he owns some property.
Somewhere. I know he obviously owns property in South Dakota, where his parents live and where his saloon, okay.
I saw a documentary on him, and it seemed like he had property right on a big lake.
I wouldn't be surprised.
We have somebody peeping out the window, and I'm not opening the door just yet.
No problem.
We're in here with the author Sherry Monahan talking about her Western. I want to call them novels, but they're not really novels in the sense of
Western books is fine.
Western books, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't have to be anything fancy.
No, not really, not at all.
Oops,
that's John Paul dropping his headset. And he's jumping out of the plane. How do we land this thing?
Parachute, you guys are on your own.
Is that a peeper out there?
I think so. You have a fan that followed you, Sherry.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I have no idea what's going on. Oh, did Bob tell you about the film festival that's coming up in Apex and the whole thing, him and John Demers?
He told me a little bit about it, but I... Go ahead and tell me some.
Apparently,
more.
It's coming up in November. I'm actually submitting an independent film, and they're taking... submissions, and at some point in November there'll be a selection made by the town's council. I don't know who that is. I know Bob is on it, and I know John Demers are on it, but I'm sure there are quite a few other natives to the area. And then sometime in November there will actually be a showing of indie films, kind of like the Virgin Islands Film Festival used to be. Just they're booking several places where they can do nothing but show films all day.
And is that in the Halley Cultural Center where they're showing?
The Halley Cultural Center, and I think some of it's going to be extended to a church as well, because they can seat about 400 or 500 people.
Okay.
400 people there. Church right up the block. Mm-hmm. That I do not know the name of. I'm not guilty of going to churches.
Well, did you know, I'm sure you know this since you lived in Apex, and a lot of people in Apex know this, but visitors might not, is that the Halley Cultural Center used to be the town hall?
Yes, way back. I do remember that now, yeah.
It was built in 1912, I think.
Yeah.
Hold me to that.
I think it was
1912.
I'm pretty sure it is.
And the fire station used
across
to be downstairs. Well, it used to be downstairs. They had a bay downstairs where the fire equipment used to sit.
That I did not know.
Yep, and they had the good old outhouse
but
in the back.
But they haven't moved much then, have they?
Just right across,
across
the street. They didn't have too far to move
there
their equipment.
There might be a
tunnel. There could be. You never know. No, they'd hit water if you did that.
That's true.
That's where the log pond used to be.
Yeah, that's true. And not too far from there is where they had that explosion not so long ago.
That is correct.
What blew up again? Some sort of chemicals.
Chemicals, yeah. Some nasty chemicals from what I understand.
They lingered for a while, yeah. Has that place been cleared? Do we know?
I think so. I'm not sure.
I'd like to think so. Was that you, Bob? Well, John.
I know nothing. I know nothing.
You see nothing?
I saw nothing.
I love that show.
I thought I saw footprints. I was going to accuse you of murdering Clouseau, but I didn't know what to attach to that story.
Very well. Yes. That was me. Oh, well, yes, that was me.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We saw your footprints. We knew only you would sneak around in sneakers like that. So the next book is... Well, I guess it still sort of falls into the Western category, doesn't it? Or more into the Victorian with the letters.
Which
the
book?
Letters. The letters.
Oh, yeah.
May be working on.
It's a Western. I'm going to sort of consider it a Western Victorian book and sort of hit both genres because it is Lake County, California, and California is definitely in the West.
Yes.
I'm going to sort of tap into both markets, which would be the first time for me. And if I do that, that sort of is going to be a step into the fictional area for me for the first time, which I'm kind of excited about because I have so much background on the history of the area and of the Old West that now I'm in a fictional book, I get to just play.
Yes.
I don't have to stick to history.
So you're sort of going to skid along the lines of the truth, but
yeah,
fictional facts and factual fictions?
Absolutely. It'll be one of those books
that
you
genre.
Based on a real, you know, real story.
She's going Jimmy Buffett now.
Yeah. I'm Parrothead. What can I say?
Fictional facts and factual fictions. Here we come. Look out. Duck, you sucker.
That's, I love it.
So, John Paul, jumping over to you very quickly, and I don't want you to take over the rest of the show with your political agenda, but what is
well,
on your show today?
Don't get me started, then.
Hey, politics played a big role in Tombstone, Arizona. There were actually two newspapers. One was for the Democrats, and one was for the Republicans.
Oh, in the early days.
And the gunfight really was based somewhat on politics.
We should be having them now.
That's right. In the early days, almost all newspapers were basically sponsored by some political group or another. In the early part, in fact, the pre-revolutionary times, that's what almost all papers were about, was some political agenda. There was no such thing as an unbiased news page. And there still isn't.
Is there today?
There never has been, and there never will be.
It was called the ownership agenda, right?
Yeah, human beings are human beings, and they're going to always have their agenda, and they can't. It's just not possible to keep it out of what you're doing. You know, now if your agenda is printing the truth, if your agenda is being accurate and giving people information that's actually accurate, then maybe you could be considered not politically ideologized, so to speak.
There are a lot of ticks on that dog.
Well, there are some, I think there are some news outlets that do that basically meet that description. But they're not mainstream. And, of course, they never will be because the mainstream media is controlled by the corporations.
And no matter what you find, you're going to find an agenda somewhere in the mix.
And by the way, when I say mainstream media controlled by corporations, I mean all mainstream media, including public television, public radio. They are heavily controlled by corporations. You cannot get information on these radio and TV stations unless it comports with the masters who are controlling the hiring and firing on those radio stations.
And of course, that is not the matter with WCOM, since we are not hired by anyone.
Since we don't get paid, they can't take our salary away from us.
Well, there you go.
And in fact, this radio group here is I think the only one of its kind, I think, in the entire world. What we do here, I don't believe is done anywhere else.
Actual freedom of speech?
Yeah.
I question.
Yeah, I mean, the only restriction we have is that we can't say the 7 bad words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can't announce prices for events.
But we have been known to do tributes to George Carlin.
We have. I was able to edit one of his presentations.
Yes, I remember that. We played it.
I was able to edit out the terrible stuff, but it was hilarious. It was the one he did on God.
Yes, which is one of my absolute favorites.
It was just absolute. It is a classic.
I'd like to play that from a pulpit somewhere.
Yeah. Well,
and get shooed out of town.
That's the thing about it.
Would you be behind glass?
When he was doing it, he sounded like a preacher.
Chicken wire.
Yeah, he sounded like a preacher, basically, he was doing it. It was funny. Yep.
So anyway, back to your agenda.
Well, that guy who was just came out of the door was interested in my show.
Ah.
And I might just have him on as a guest so we can talk about.
Well, how
you know,
dare he interrupt mine?
Well, I
the
mean,
nerve.
You know, he had no idea. You know,
tell him there's a bridge he can cross somewhere.
He just knows nothing about you, Claudio.
Lucky I didn't have a gun.
Right. That's my. That's good for my ego.
Well, so what I'm going to do today is meander through the most recent things in the mainstream media lies,
which is not exactly meandering through the tulips.
And I'm going to talk about the specifics of the Obama speech in Cairo. I'm going to talk about
how to have your mouth full and say nothing. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about how what Obama is doing is right along the same track as what George W. Bush was doing and what...
Oh, they picked up so many of the policies. And
what Bill Clinton was doing and what...
Between that and all the Clinton people he has working for him.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well...
And what we're never told is that they're actually related. They're cousins. Well, very, very distant.
Bushes, very distantly,
very, very
but there
distant
is a
cousins. Genetic link, which doesn't surprise me.
But it's extremely thin.
We point
there's
you
more
to
than
the,
that. They got an Arkansas
We
link.
Point you to the puppeteers.
They're much more, their associations are much more tied together by the people who contributed to their campaigns.
Oh, no doubt.
Than they are by genetics. It's amazing how many of the very same companies contribute to both the Democrats and the Republicans. And then you have this
whoever's in power.
You have these opposing groups of people that don't contribute to both campaigns, but they're still part of the criminal cabal, the corporate criminal cabal that really runs things in this nation and in the finances of the world. And to understand this, you have to simply look at the model of the National Football League. You have the AFC and the NFC. You have the National Football Conference and the American Football Conference, and they are both part of the National Football League, the NFL. You don't play in the NFL unless you're in one of those leagues. It's the same thing as the political system in the United States. You don't get to play unless you're either a Republican or a Democrat. Very few people get anywhere at all in politics unless they affiliate with one of those two groups. And this is not just a simple evolutionary phenomenon. This is a deliberate and has long been a deliberate aspect of political life in the United States. You might note that in the Constitution of the United States, there is no mention of political parties. Political parties do not exist in the Constitution. In fact, the founders, who I said before were really writing the Constitution on the basis of their own interests, nevertheless, they did not mention political parties, and in fact, they were against the establishment of political parties, most of them. There were no political parties during the Revolution, and there was no political affiliation running candidates for the election of George Washington.
Well, I've always been under the impression that if you take that office, you're working for the American people. No left, no right, just do your job.
Well, you would think that's what it was, but unfortunately, it's never been that way. Everyone who's ever been president has been in the pocket of large moneyed interests.
No doubt.
Everyone, not
so
one.
So that is where
president.
That's where your program is going today.
I mean, it's where I go every day.
I walk through the tulips.
This is my life. This is what I say. This is what
the
I do.
Tulips, shall we say, from many different species
yes,
out
yes,
there.
Yes, yes. So that's it.
Well, good.
Tune
and, that's,
in at 11.
And your show, please. Your name,
John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour.
Yes, and if that Variety. Doesn't confuse you, you can do backflips on a hard surface.
It's meant to confuse you, and I do occasionally, as you know, have guests on who have nothing to do with politics. And,
yes.
You know, I had Mickey Mills on, who's the steel drum player from Trinidad, who's a good friend of mine that I've known for many, many years. And, you know, I've interviewed the executive director of 911truth.org, which
right.
is a national organization dedicated to exposing the truth about 9/11. It's not a conspiracy group. There's no conspiracy that they present. They instead talk about the conspiracy that is outlined in the 9/11 commission report, which is a hilariously stupid and absolutely
well, we're going to leave it at that.
Impossible theory, but it is a conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes,
it's the conspiracy theory, not those they call conspiracy theorists.
I understand.
Amen.
We're going to go,
say hallelujah.
Yes, please. If you're into that,
can I get
thing?
A witness?
I don't believe you heard me. And one more time, we're going to go back to Sherry and get all of her contact information, as well as mention of all the books you've written, and so on. Ooh, drum roll.
Yeah, that's quite resonant there. The table is resonating at the...
Keep forgetting about this table we're flying.
That's about that's anyway, 120
we have
cycles.
We have the Western author and historian, Sherry Monahan, on Claudio's Speakeasy, The Literary and All Else Today, here at WCOM 103.5 FM. And I'm going to have her give us a rundown of all of her books again and her contact information. So if anyone out there is interested, you can peruse her subject on the web or connect with her.
Okay. The first book is Taste of Tombstone. The second is Pike's Peak. The third is The Wicked West, Boozers, Cruisers, Gamblers,
and More.
That's
the one I want, yes.
And the last one that is currently out is Tombstone's Treasure, Silver Mines and Golden Saloons.
And when does Apex come out?
The Apex book will be out before the end of this year. I just turned it into my publisher. We don't have a release date yet, but I'm thinking somewhere between October and December.
Keep me in mind on that. I'll buy one of the first copies.
Thank you.
And you can go to wildwest.com.
Wildwestinfo.
Wildwestinfo.com.
Get it straight.
Is that
right.
.com?
.com.
Wildwestinfo.com. And on that website, you can see all this information. And
that
other
is all the old West stuff, correct? Okay.
And there are excerpts of the books.
There are, and the free recipe, too.
Wonderful, yes.
Right. WildWestInfo.com.
Yep. WildWestInfo.com, that's right. And then the other one is SherryMonahan.com, where you can learn about my other life and get information about the Apex book. It's not up yet, but it will be up in the next week.
Good, good. So you're ready.
There'll be a comment, be uploading a cover image of the book and putting in a little blurb about what it's going to be about and when it's going to be released, so you can track it, the progress there.
I noticed from one of my recent emails to you, you were responding from California.
Yes.
So what was happening in California?
I went to visit, I have a friend who lives in Newport Beach, California, and pretty much I was out playing with the rich and famous.
Okay.
Nobody really famous, just really rich.
I thought perhaps you were promoting Apex to California. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm always promoting. My friend has a very, very nice house, and we had a business dinner for her business. She owns her own company, and I, of course, like being the cook, so I decided to chef for seven people. It turned out being nine. I had to make two entrees, which I didn't know. But here's the funny thing is my friend who, you know, I'm just thinking we're going to have dinner out on this beautiful patio that overlooks Catalina Island and the Pacific Coast. She says, oh, well, you can't do this by yourself. I don't want you serving. I'm hiring you two waiters.
Whoa.
She hired me waiters in her house. I said, I need to go home and have a dose of reality.
That's right. No, you don't. Stay with that.
You know, $300 bottles of wine. I was like, oh, my Lord.
Not a bad view either.
No, not at all. But I came home. My husband's like, we have to redecorate again, don't we? At least I didn't come and say I want a bigger house.
Right. Something that looks more like and feels more like Texas.
Like a mansion.
Well, John Paul, I think in the interest of you having enough time to do the switch
over.
Well,
you know what? Actually, I've changed my mind. I just remembered that the Evergreen show that plays automatically, if we end before that ends, it's just, and I turn the Simeon back up, we're just going to hear the end of
the Evergreen show.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll just go on and
we'll go to the end and then we'll what do you call
it? We'll go to the end and about 2 minutes till 11, we'll start playing the music for the outro.
Well, I'm going to give one more shout out to our sponsors and underwriters again then, the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham. You can go to their website and see all the interesting things that are happening there between movies and live productions. And Cabin in a Studio. I keep going
studio
to that. Cabin
in
the Woods.
Studio in the Woods.
I know John
woods.
Demers loves this because he gets mileage out of me because I'm always tripping over the
and
cabin
a shout out to
get
John.
To the studio.
A shout out to John Demers.
Shout out. I hope you're feeling better, buddy.
He was in the hospital having just had surgery, and he's doing fairly well. You saw him yesterday.
He looks
right?
like he's in an upswing, and I certainly hope it stays that way. He's this tall fella, and he's down to 136 pounds. Which
yeah,
is
he's 6'4". He's down to 137.
He's not careful. He's going to shrink.
Yeah, well, he's been shrinking, but now hopefully that'll all straighten out.
It's like that Stephen King novel, Thinner.
He'll be able to continue work on his movie projects, including Will to Power.
And he's got one coming up. He's doing one that him and I are going to collaborate on, and probably going to be speaking to you on the musical end of things, and that is this miniseries. I think it's going to be for NBC. I can't let the cat out of the bag.
Well, we don't know yet who it's going to
be. Yeah, some television. It's going to be a 13 episode miniseries that I'm hoping to do the narration as well as some acting for.
Yeah, well, and of course, this is we're talking about doing a pilot that will sell the show. Thousands of people do
as
that.
As a matter of fact, that stretches between here and California. A lot of his associates are out California way and England for that.
John's a very creative guy and very energetic, so I think he's going to have a big chance of making
it. We wish
you
a speedy recovery. I'm pretty sure he tunes us in. I know he's got his computer right by his bedside so he can get us live streaming. So there, we know you're listening.
He's probably listening right now.
Yeah, I know those guys. Not sure I want to be known for that association.
If he's still there tomorrow, I may go see him tomorrow. But I don't know when he's going to get out.
And that's just one of the fibs he's told you today.
Just one of them.
He might actually make it out. I can't speak for him
in
that department.
I'm such a busy guy. I don't know.
Sherry, I just want to tell you, just consider yourself part of the Speakeasy family at this point, and I hope this
Thank
is going
you.
To be one of many interviews whenever you've got new things coming out, or just we feel like getting together and talking about something. And if you have some cooking things coming up, let me know. I might want to jump in.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't mind learning some more about the true Western culture. That's a repertoire I don't possess.
Indeed. Oh, it's great. I think you would love it, especially, you know, you talk about South Africa. And yeah.
I know we did a lot of outside cooking. We called them braais and so on. So I think...
Well, my husband and I own 40 acres of ranch land outside of Tombstone.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
We'll rent a 30-foot RV in Tucson and drive it down, which is about an hour and 15 minutes south.
That's really
and,
cool.
And my friends tease me because they camp, and we went on vacation with them out there and took them out there, and we have this big, giant open pit with mesquite wood.
Wonderful.
And I grill everything
Ooh,
out there.
Boy, I can think of things.
And
about.
I cook, you know, all kinds of meals, and we have a pop-up PVC picnic table. We have chairs. Nice. We have wine glasses. We have tablecloths. You know, my
Perfect.
Friends go, "Oh, God, you're the Martha Stewart of camping."
Oh, take that name away.
Well, what can I tell you? That's what they think of.
She's no Martha Stewart. She's much more fun.
Thank you.
So anyway, Sherry, thank you for being
thank
on.
Thank you.
And yes, folks, thanks very much, Sherry, for coming.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure having you on, folks. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week. This is Claudio of the Speakeasy and everyone else saying until next time, cheers.
And this is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with the song of my heart, and the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, 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 drifting ever back to you.